With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Thanks for tuning into RCR, Reality Check Radio. The following interview contains topics that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. If you would like to contact us in regards to any of our content, please email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. That's inbox@realitycheck.radio.
Good morning and welcome to Counter Culture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Joining me now is somebody that we had booked and was suggested very strongly by Tony Pitt as well as Ali Marie Diamond, but as you know, both previous guests on the show, and I spoke to Tony just a few weeks ago, and that is Heidi Olsen. Now, before I introduce Heidi to you, you may have heard the disclaimer. I am actually going to reiterate that disclaimer and warning here, not a disclaimer, the warning here, before we proceed with the show. Some of the content of the show you may find disturbing. We are going to be talking about things which are affecting children of both a violent and a sexual nature. So if you have got little ears around and you've got this on the Bluetooth speaker, may I suggest you get the headphones and pop those on, because this is certainly something that could be very triggering if you have got smaller people or you have had a sexual experience of this ilk. So I just do want to put that out there. We will make sure that we will have some resources if you do want to reach out and you think you need to talk to somebody about the content that you have heard. I will make sure that the team at inbox@realitycheck.radio have some places that you can reach out to discuss some of the things here further. Right, now with all of that said, I want to introduce to you Heidi Olsen. She's a pediatric nurse and specifically a SANA nurse, which is a sexual assault nurse examiner. She's also the founder of Paradigm Shift. And Heidi, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on your show.
Oh, it is a great honor to have you here as well, because this is a content I've been talking in 2024. There's a lot of content that I want to shine a light on in New Zealand. And that's the thing, when you start shining lights on things, it's amazing what else that you find. And when I spoke to Tony a few weeks back, in the discussion with him, there was one thing that he said that just hit me like a bolt out of the blue, and that was around child sexual abuse and how most child sexual abuse was, in fact, perpetrated child on child. And that literally stopped me dead in my tracks. This is the area that you specialize in. So can you just explain to our audience, how did we get to this place?
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think for most people, myself included, when I started doing this work, I just automatically assumed that when a child had been sexually abused, the perpetrator would be, you know, some adult male who's 60 years old, you know, who seems super creepy and, you know, all the stereotypes that we have about sexual abuse. That's what I pictured in my mind. And very quickly, that was shattered as I'm taking care of kids who have been sexually abused. We write down the perpetrator's ages for the paperwork that we have. And I'm writing down the perpetrator as 11, 12, 10. And I think I just, a few months into this work, walked away saying, what is happening? And is this specific to where I live? So I'm sure as your audience can hear, I'm from the United States. I specifically live in Kansas City. So I'm right in the middle of the United States. And I thought, is this just specific to where I'm at? Like, is this happening everywhere? So I started collecting data. I started asking questions. I started reaching out to other places, and it's happening everywhere across the globe. This is not specific to the United States. It's happening in Canada. Australia just released a study this year saying kids make up the biggest group of perpetrators in the country. The UK did the exact same thing, saying over 50% of their perpetrators are children. So we know in most countries who are collecting data, this is the trend. A huge amount of perpetrators are children themselves. And it does seem like it's increasing from what we can tell from the data that's been collected. But it's I mean, it's difficult to absorb for multiple reasons, but I think something that's hard for people is they're like, but I'm not hearing about this. No one's talking about it. So how can this be this global phenomenon if no one's willing to say, yeah, this is what we're seeing? And it's very multifaceted and complex why it's not sort of being publicized, but it's absolutely factual information that a huge amount of kids are sexually assaulting other kids in most countries.
I'm floored. I did say to you before we got started, one of the things that I think you should warn people about, particularly mothers of teenage sons, is not to watch this. I've watched a couple of your speeches and presentations. It's not good for, you know, peaceful night's sleep. I can tell you that. What are the triggers? Because, of course, I'm looking at this thinking, well, has it always been this way? Has it always been the fact that children have been the main perpetrators on other child's sexual abuse? Or has there been some sort of societal paradigm shift in the last, I don't know, 10 or 20 years?
Yeah, so I would put it out there, there's been a shift. And so this is coming from the data I collected at the hospital that I was working at. So what we saw when we broke down the perpetrators' age ranges, and I just want to make note of the fact that I was working for a very high volume program, meaning we were seeing hundreds of victims a year. So this is not data based off of like 20, you know, patients we've seen a year. We have a really good sort of sample size that we can draw from. So what I saw was that it was actually in 2015 that we started to really see that shift where 11 to 15 year old males were making up the biggest age range of perpetrators that we had. And that trend has not stopped. It's current to 2023. So it fit 2015 every single year. And most forensic programs that I talk to in hospitals are saying, yeah, we're seeing the same thing. And I would, my sort of in logically thinking about what was happening in the world, by 2015, most kids have devices in their hands. So what we are seeing, and there's a lot of research behind this. So this is not just me making stuff up or sort of guessing. There's quite a bit of research that backs this that's been published. Kids are seeing pornography on their devices at very young ages, and they're acting out what they're seeing. And so I think that's just contributing to the amount of kids who are sexually abusing other kids. Now, have kids sexually assaulted kids for all of history? Yes, this is not a new phenomenon, but the prevalence, I think, is skyrocketing because we have so many kids who are viewing very violent pornography. They're acting it out, and parents have no idea that any of this is happening.
This is, you know, it's really interesting you say that with the date, because I follow and talk about on the show about culture, right? So I spend a lot of time looking at people that are steeped in ideologies like critical race theory, queer theory, critical theory in itself as its entirety. And it's interesting you that date, 2015, because 2015 was also in terms of a of those theories hitting into mainstream. So not just within academia, but they then started heading into a place of governance. And I just wonder what element or what effect do progressive, permissive Western societies have and the mores around those to, I don't know, the mindset of these children believing that what they're doing is okay.
Absolutely. So I would say it varies in terms of permissibility, but absolutely. I've seen it firsthand. There are parents that know their kid, their, you know, 12, 13, 14 year old sons or even daughters are seeing pornography. And it's like, yeah, no big deal. You know, I will give you an example. I took care of a 4 year old who had been sexually assaulted by her 13 year old brother. She had a very clear disclosure of what happened. And of course, the mom was devastated, which makes sense. So I'm taking care of the 4 year old. And what the mom was telling me was, yeah, my 13-year-old looks at porn all the time. My husband knows it and is like, nah, no big deal. Like, it's fine. And in fact, the dad was almost doing this mental gymnastics of saying, well, maybe the 4-year-old saw the porn on his phone, on the 13-year-old's phone, and now she's making up this disclosure because of what she's seen. And I'm like, doesn't it make more sense that the 13-year-old who's watching porn is acting it out on the 4-year-old versus the 4-year-old seeing it and then lying and making up a disclosure? So I think even for some parents who are habitually looking at pornography, who think it's socially acceptable, who don't think it's a big deal, yeah, when their kid's looking at porn, it's like, meh, whatever. Or, you know, back in the day, you hear about parents that gave their kids porn, right? Here's Playboy, here's Penthouse. I think it's the same way, just on a digital platform.
So here's the thing. So this is the thing, right? So I've had the porn discussion with my husband and around the kids. And he said, he goes, oh, you know, look, all kids will look at porn. But he is setting it from a paradigm of his 50-ish something self of pinching his father's Playboys from underneath the bed when he was a teenager. But this is not what we're talking about here. I mean, correct. So just, and this is, again, I'm just going to pop this warning out, guys. We're going to get a little bit graphic now, I think, if Heidi's going to head down the path where I think she's going to head. Can you just give, there are some very, very key things that are now cropping up in pornography that you're seeing being played out in real life. What are some of those things? Or what is the reality of pornography today compared to the myth of what we think it might be?
Absolutely. So yes, this is going to get very explicit. And I think it has to be so that we fully understand what kids are seeing. So most kids, if they have a device and there's no filter, there's nothing to protect them on there, they're about two clicks away from pornography at any given time. So when an eight-year-old types girls into, you know, whatever search internet browser, he probably thinks he's going to see girls, you know, that are cute or whatever. He's not thinking he's going to see hardcore pornography. And that is what's going to pop up. Mainstream porn. So again, what a kid will see within 5 seconds of being on the internet is what we all as adults considered hardcore porn 20 years ago. And the reason that that is happening is because if you think about algorithms, they're catered to these adult men who are 30, 40 years old, who have been looking at internet porn for 20 years. So these men need really hard, really violent, really shocking content to get the same dopamine response in their brain. So the eight-year-old is seeing what the 40-year-old, maybe porn addict, is looking for as soon as they click on a Pornhub video, which means they're going to see really, really violent anal pounding. They're watching strangulation. They're watching videos where women are essentially being tortured and raped or saying no, and the male just continues on with the sexual violence towards her. Most videos, about 90%, have some type of violence towards a woman. And what's happening in porn is women are directed to express pleasure when violence is directed at them or aggression. So think about what that's teaching an eight-year-old, right? You have a woman who's being strangled and her head's being slammed against the floor. And she's smiling or saying, keep doing that to me. What does that teach an eight-year-old boy? What does that teach an eight-year-old girl? We also see really popular themes are ejaculation on the face, including multiple men ejaculating on a woman's face so she can't even see after it's over. A lot of humiliation type of themes, calling her names, multiple men penetrating one woman, just a huge lack of empathy. There's no mutuality. There's no level of consent. And so if you imagine a child with a brain that is not fully developed, who maybe doesn't even understand what sex is, they accidentally stumble onto that content. That's traumatic. And then how does that set your sexual template? If you think about what are they going to refer to sex as for the rest of their life when it started by them watching a video of a woman being, you know, violently assaulted by someone saying, I like this. And so you can see if a child's watching that day after day, they're going to act it out. They have mirror neurons. And a lot of times it's ending up that they're violently assaulting other kids or their peers.
Oh, right. Just letting that sink in is just so difficult. So as a nurse, as a sane nurse, were you seeing those linkages? So like if you had a patient that came to you or a victim that came to you, were you able to then make that link between victimhood and then porn? I mean, was it because you were seeing those things act out? I mean, how did that present itself to you?
Yes. So there's multiple ways we see this. I would say it goes beyond correlation. There's a causation there. The first time I saw this was almost 10 years ago. I was taking care of a 5-year-old and her 12-year-old brother had assaulted her and their dad had walked in and seen it. So there was no question about what happened. It was very clearly a sexual assault. It was witnessed. Of course, the parents are absolutely heartbroken. And so I'm talking to them and the mom says, you know, our 12-year-old's been looking at violent porn. Do you think this has anything to do with his assault? And it was just like a light bulb went off in my head of like, of course it does. And he had had signs of porn addiction. He was failing in school now. He was isolating. He was just going to his room and shutting the door. The parents had tried to put parameters on his phone and he kept finding pornography. So he's showing all of these signs of problematic porn use. And now it's escalated to I'm acting it out on my sister. And so once I started to connect those dots, I started reading, researching, collecting data, and realizing we're seeing this all the time, especially if we ask the right questions. So we have many patients coming in that are just spontaneously disclosing. You know, this person showed me porn, then they assaulted me. They told me they couldn't stop thinking about this pornography, then they assaulted me. They, you know, were looking at porn, you know, on the school bus and then assaulted me at school. You know, we're seeing all sort of the connections here of what's driving this. But we also see lots of teens who are creating their own pornography. So they're assaulting kids, teenagers, filming it and sending it out on Snapchat or distributing it to each other in other ways. So there's multiple ways pornography is a part of sexual assault, but we're definitely seeing that escalate. And so we'll ask our teenage patients about that specifically, you know, was porn involved? Did they send you naked photos? Did they ask for naked photos? Did they film the assault? You know, did they show you porn? And lots of times, I think when the kids feel safe with us, they'll say, yes, this was a part of it. And so more and more, we see that relationship between pornography, sexual assault, and children, unfortunately.
So is it predominantly boy on girl or is there boy on boy as well? What is the sort of makeup in terms of the you know, the sexuality makeup of it, of that?
Yeah, so females tend to predominantly be the victims, or at least that's who's disclosing most often to us. But of course, we have seen males who have sexually assaulted other males for sure. But I've also seen females who have sexually assaulted younger males. So we took care of a 4-year-old boy and his 11-year-old sister had sexually assaulted him. And he disclosed to his parents and he said she had these videos of naked people and was having me watch them and then said, do what they're doing. So she was using pornography to groom her 4-year-old brother. So absolutely, females are not exempt from looking at pornography and from acting it out as well. But primarily, again, if we're going to sort of stereotype, it is males who are perpetrating against females.
Because traditionally, and if you were, if you were to watch a television drama or what have you, they will indicate that whoever the young perpetrator was, is they're often a victim themselves of sexual assault. So then you have parents who would potentially not want to bring these children forward because the dads would be like, well, they're going to think I abused my son. I mean, is that a reality or is that?
No, it's not. So if we think about it logically, because yes, I've heard that argument for many years. But if we stop and think about it, if victims become perpetrators, most perpetrators would be females, right? Because most females are the ones who are being victimized, but they're not. Only a very small percentage of females, you know, act out sexually because of they've been sexually abused. Typically, it's males. And sometimes they don't have a history of being sexually abused at all. There's lots of reasons why they may act out in sexually harmful ways. You know, it can be things from having an attachment disorder to being physically abused or neglected to maybe not being able to control their compulsions. Like there's lots of reasons why maybe a younger boy or a teenage boy would do this. But then when they are looking at pornography, hold on, I can make her stop working. When they're looking at pornography, it's just like pouring gasoline on a fire. So what we see a lot of times with kids who are acting out with harmful sexual behaviors is sometimes they don't have a history of sexual abuse at all. Sometimes the only risk factor we're seeing is porn use. And again, research bears this out. We know that the more that children look at pornography and are consuming it, the more likely they're going to be juvenile sex offenders, that there is that correlation there. And so no, if a kid has sexually acted out, it does not mean that they're being perped on by anybody else. And the, and of course, it's multiple reasons why they could be doing that. But pornography is a huge, huge factor in all of this.
It's almost like porn is the new drug.
Yes, it is.
And is any work being done in the space of sexual health? Because I know sexual health and sexual health education is something that has taken a transformation of its own across the Western canon. I know in the United States, those sorts of curriculums get broken down to a school board level. So it's not federal, but here we're going through a massive change in what we call our RSE education, which is our sex ed. So the days for me, you know, of the day, you know, you go to school and you learn how to put a condom on a banana are well and truly gone. So now they're actually focusing very much in what I call the intersectional space, and it is talking about gender and gender fluidity and all of those sorts of concepts. Is anywhere actually looking at porn, just for starters? I mean, is there any open discussion with children within an educational context that this is out there and this is dangerous?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So the only group that I know of, they're in the United States, they're called Culture Reframed, and they have created sex education for schools through a porn critical lens. So everything that they're basically offering to say, hey, this is what we think you should be teaching the students, it's all coming through that lens of they are looking at porn. What is porn teaching them? And it's very much through a lens of porn is telling us lies about healthy, you know, sexuality, gender roles, like all the different things that it teaches that are so toxic, violence, all those things. It covers that. And they are the only group I know of that is doing anything proactive. Which I agree, that is such a good space to be able to talk about this with kids, because they are seeing it. That's the, I think, pushback I get from adults is like, well, we don't want to bring it up because we don't want to introduce an idea that maybe they haven't thought of. And it's like, no, 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 we're so behind on this. They're already seeing it. Their little brains are probably already addicted to it. We have to start talking about it instead of everyone, you know, sort of putting their heads in the sand and like, we don't want to go there. It's like, okay, we have an entire generation who is growing up having no understanding of healthy sexuality because they're seeing porn. And we just, as adults, don't even want to talk about it. No. So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. So I'd like you to put some numbers around this too, because if anybody's listening to this, and you said before in terms of the work you do, it was a significant sample size, but you've also been tracking studies across the world. And yeah, there was a lot of, they just correlated across the Western Hemisphere. So give us some numbers. What are we actually statistically looking at here?
Yes. So it's very difficult to find statistics on this. I'm just going to put that out there. If you hear this talking, you're trying to do research, it's really hard. So for me, I had the privilege of being in a program where I could collect that type of data. So I will start there. I will say, when we really started to put the numbers to this in 2017, we were really shocked because we had seen about 450 victims that year, and almost half of our perpetrators were minors that year.
So
and
under 18?
Yes, under 18, correct. And I think that gave all of us pause of like, this is out of control. Depending on the given year since that time, it is anywhere from a third to half, pretty much any year is where the perpetrators are under the age of 18. There was a large study done in the United States several years ago saying the same thing, that they believe about a third to half of all the perpetrators in our country are children themselves. The UK just published a study in January of this year saying over 50% of their perpetrators are now children. Australia also just published one saying same thing, the majority, I don't remember exactly what the statistic was, but the majority of their perpetrators are children. I also just saw a study come out of the UK saying they believe about two-thirds of adolescents are addicted to online pornography. Two-thirds.
Oh, that's a terrifying number.
Yes, really high. That was coming from a therapy group that was doing treatment. I'm trying to think if I've seen anything else that's published, but it's countries that are willing to collect this data and then publish it is really where we're getting it. Whereas in the United States, there's so many systems that are not communicating with each other. It's very difficult to get an accurate look at how big of a problem it is because, so for example, the hospital is collecting data, the juvenile justice system is collecting data, child protective services, but none of them are communicating with each other. And then it's state by state. And then there is no requirement to publish this. You know, it's just like no one's wanting to publicize that this is such a big problem. None of the systems are communicating. So we just don't have a good like central database to say, here's truly how big of a problem it is. Mm.
So one of the pieces that I pulled out of the presentation that I watched the other day was in the United Kingdom, the study you referenced before, a 400% rise on child-on-child assaults. more than that, when the numbers were broken down, this was the thing, it said mine is under 18s, but it was actually the 11 to 15 year old age group.
Yes, that's right. So when we break down the actual ages of kids where we're saying 0 to 10 year olds, 11 to 15 year olds, 16 to 18 year olds, kind of trying to look at more specific trends, the 11 to 15 year olds every single year at our hospital actually have the most perpetrators in their age range.
And what are the age of the victims? Are they 11 to 15 year olds or are they younger?
They're younger. It's usually 4 to 7 year olds that they are perpetrating on. Right. Yes. Which is heartbreaking.
So look, if anyone else out there is listening to this and feeling exactly how I'm feeling, do feel that you can go and get a cup of tea, because I think, you know, we all need that. And this is just, what just makes me so angry is again, no one wants to shine a light on it. And I know that this is difficult to listen to. I mean, I'm finding it difficult preparing for this. And I, you know, I said to you before I got started, it was like girding, literally having to sort of steel myself to have this conversation. But we have to. We have to, because it's not going away. And from what you're saying, it's only since 2015, it's been on a rapid increase and only gotten dramatically worse. So with the people that you work with, and I know that you've been doing a lot of work and you've been presenting a lot, solutions. What has there been solutions voiced or ideas brainstormed of what as a group you can do to help solve this problem?
Yes, there is good news. There are people who care about this and really want to make a difference. So I definitely don't want to leave everyone feeling hopeless, because I know this can feel so overwhelming. Before we get to solutions, I just want to throw one more trend out there that I've just started seeing this year, that this is going to be even more depressing, but I think it's important for us to...
Nice that you prefaced some hope there, Heidi. Okay, so give us the sandwich, you prefaced the hope, give us the... Yep. And then we can get to the good stuff.
Exactly. So I think if we're thinking about just how prevalent pornography is in general, but then kids viewing it and acting it out, AI is going to make this 1,000 times worse. So we're already starting to see that in the United States, where we have, you know, there are AI generators where all you need is someone's face. The more pictures of their face that you have, the more realistic the AI generated images will be. Well, our faces are all over the internet, right? For most of us, especially kids who have social media. So what we've been seeing is boys in middle school. So here, that's boys that are ages like 12 to 14. They're taking girls' pictures of just their faces, putting it through an AI generator, it takes about 10 minutes, and creating nude images of them that look extremely realistic, and then passing it along to each other. So they're creating pornography of their peers that's not real, but it looks real. So you can't tell that it's not super traumatic. And it's a joke, right? It's something that they're, you know, masturbating to and sharing with each other and traumatizing the girls in their school, which is a type of sexual abuse.
And how do you regulate that? Because, of course, the image has never been taken of the girl.
Right. So that's the big debate that's starting to come up, is what do we do with these images that are technically child sexual abuse material? They're not real, but they're the likeness of a real child. So our laws are way behind. You know, while this is just a kid can do this in class in 10 minutes and ha-ha, this is funny, I just ruined someone's life with this image. But I'm so desensitized because I look at porn all the time. I'm not thinking about how this is going to affect this girl 5 years from now. And so we've seen multiple instances of that happening in our schools this year alone. So I think that's another thing to think through, is sort of how AI is going to continue to, I think, just make the porn problem worse. Because what it's going to do is, if you think about how addicting pornography already is, AI porn is going to be, it's like, if you did cocaine, but it was like specific to your DNA, like it specifically made you as high as you could be. That's what AI porn will be, because it's going to be able to create porn to your likeness, exactly what you want to see, doing whatever acts you want to see with the perfect body. It's going to be uniquely created to that person. It's going to be very hard to stop looking at it. think just some trends to think about as we move into sort of this new frontier with artificial intelligence.
See, I'm sitting here thinking, forget the cup of tea and pour a glass of Chardonnay at this time of the morning. Crikey. Right, okay, come on, Heidi.
Okay,
just when we thought that we couldn't be more shocked, let's look at some hope, because I know that I've spoken to some really inspiring people. I've had the great pleasure of a couple of times talking to the wonderful Helen Taylor from Exodus Cry.
Yes. Oh, I love Helen. She's amazing.
She is amazing. The work she's doing, especially in this porn space, is incredible. In Australia, Daniel Principe from Master of the Romans, he's doing some amazing stuff, and I hope to actually talk to Daniel again this year. He's fabulous. But come on, give us some hope, Heidi. I think we need a little hope
here. Yes, we do, myself included. It's hard to not get into this space of there's so many problems. Where do we focus? But there are amazing people who are doing really, really good, I would say, grassroots work around this. There's several groups in the United States that have said, hey, we know that this is an issue, and we really, you know, want to start to equip professionals with how to deal with this. So I'm actually part of a working group right now with Child Advocacy Centers and Cultural Reframed, where we meet every month and we're creating materials to give to mental health therapists, to give to healthcare workers, to give to parents, to say, okay, your kid's seen porn. Now what? What do you do? How do you talk to them about this? Your kid has sexually acted out on another kid. All right, now what? So kind of going through, we know it's happening. How do we equip our professionals and our parents with it with healthy solutions? Because that just doesn't exist right now. So even for healthcare workers, what we're creating for them are screening tools. Like, how do you ask your 13-year-old patient, are you looking at pornography? Is it out of control? You know, what do we need to address here? If you ask most, you know, physicians or nurses to ask that question, they would look at you like you're an alien, right? Like, I'm not talking to my patient about that. We have to. So if we can equip them with, here's why you need to do it, here's how you do it, they're much more likely to start to engage with that.
Well, and also too, like teachers and educators and doctors and other medical professionals, they're often the first port of call when there's something wrong with a child, right? So they're trained when to identify potentially abuse at home or drug abuse. You know, there's lots of information out there. Is your teen taking drugs? These are the symptoms. I think porn needs to be added as one of the drugs.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree.
Could your teen be consuming, addicted to porn? Here are the things to look for. I think, I know some people here. I'm thinking, Tony's crew at Family First. I feel a phone call to Bob coming on.
Yes. Yeah, there are, I think, in most countries, people who are seeing the problem and they are proactively trying to take steps. I've worked with amazing nurses in the UK doing the same thing I'm doing. There are some amazing people in Australia as well. I've even talked to people in New Zealand that are passionate about this and care about it. It's just the porn industry, it makes hundreds of billions of dollars every year. It's such a predatory industry. And so the few people, you know, raising red flags here and there, their voices definitely are not as loud as this gigantic monster of an industry. So I think if we can link arms and continue to say, like, actually, this is not okay because of X, Y, and Z, I think we'll get more and more support. But there are, I do want to leave, you always have to know there are people who are recognizing the problem, who are coming up with proactive solutions. It's kind of the Wild West, right? Like, none of us know exactly how we're supposed to address some of these new trends because technology is changing so fast. And so I think that a lot of people, they do care. They want what's best for their kids. You know, I think sometimes it just feels overwhelming. Like, I don't know where to start. So I do have hope that as we get the word out there and equip people with what to do, there'll be more recognition that pornography is harmful. And there are, you know, we all want better things for our kids.
So if people want to dive a little bit deeper into this, and there might be people out there that are concerned and they want to get some of your resourcing, where can they find some of the talks that you have done or some resources that you suggest that they have a look at that might actually start them on a journey or just a bit of research before they go a wee bit further?
Yeah, absolutely. There are lots of great sites. So my website, it's called paradigmshifttc.com. I have a place called Forensic Files, and it has lots of articles that I have written, talks that I've given, So if you want to learn more. And then there are lots of other really good groups. I just wrote a blog this week for a group called Defend Young Minds. It's all about protecting kids from porn, or when they see porn, you know, equipping them with what to do. They have written books for little kids, which is really helpful. Protect Young Mind, or Protect Young Eyes, is another really good one that's porn specific. Culturally Framed, like I've named them a couple of times. All of them have really excellent resources geared around protecting kids, and all of them have resource pages, you know, for more information. So I would start there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also too, I guess, as a parent, just don't be so blasé about handing over that screen.
Right. Yeah, I will leave you with this story. I think to drive the point home that I have a colleague, he works with high school students. So, you know, kind of 14 to 18 year old kids. He was in a rural school in the middle of the United States. So kind of farm country, very small town, and the teachers in the school. So he goes around and talks about pornography, online safety, things like that. And the teachers were like, we really don't need that education. Like, our students aren't looking at anything. So I said, okay, just track what they're looking at on their school issued laptops for a month. And let's just see, like if everything's fine, great. In 1 month, there were 140 students in the school. So very small. In 1 month, there were 13,000 hits to Pornhub on their school issued laptops. 13,000. That is every kid going to Pornhub three times every day on their school issued laptop, right? In the middle of like rural America, where everyone's like, we don't have this problem. So if it's happening there, it's happening everywhere, even in schools where kids are using their school issued device to look at porn a lot. And so I think that was really eye opening, of course, to everyone to just think, this is out of control and we have to start having conversations about it.
Right. Oh, you are such a roller coaster, Heidi. This has been Heidi Olson. Yeah. And as I said before, I'm going to gather together some resources here to make sure that Liz, if anyone has heard any of this and they just are concerned, they've got some concerns at home, I'm going to make sure that the team has got some resources, local resources of places that you can go, and we'll potentially pull that together. But Heidi, look, it's a difficult conversation to have, but we have to have it. And I really want to thank you for giving up your time today to have this conversation with us and for all the work that you're doing. This has been Heidi Olson from Paradigm Shift. And as she said, ParadigmShiftTC.com is her website. And yeah, keep fighting the fight, Heidi.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate it. And on that bombshell, right, 2057 is the text number. Inbox@realitycheck.radio is the email. And as I said, there will be some resources with our team there that if you have some concerns and you want to find a little bit more, talk to somebody on a local level here in New Zealand, we will have some numbers that you should be able to do that with. Coming up, don't disappear, more here to come, including my mate Marty with Media Matters. And of course, after me, Up Your Braid with Natalie Cutler-Welsh. So it's a big old morning here this morning on Wednesday morning. Take care, you with Marie here at Counterculture on Reality Check Radio. Now, if you're still listening at this point, I really do want to thank you for hanging in there with me today. It's been such a powerful show with so many themes that so many of you may have found tough. If anything that you've heard this morning has you wanting to seek further assistance, please do contact us. Again, 2057 is the text and inbox@realitycheck.radio is the email. And we will point you in the right direction to local services who specialise in sexual assault counselling.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.